All right. From music to poetry, it's a short step, really. And if there's any step at all, actually, I just think about it. Milwaukee does strange things to people, poems selected and new from Susan Farrer, who is actually the poet laureate of Milwaukee, or was, I guess. There's a new one now, but we don't. That's for life. Would you welcome Susan Farrer, please, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, that's you. That's you now. How are you? So you know what we have in common, besides we're both from Milwaukee, but I'm the biggest fan of William Carlos Williams, my favorite poet in the world.
Well, there's a new anthology out, people writing on William Carlos Williams. It's called Revisiting Dr. Williams, and I do have a piece in that.
You do? Yeah. Oh, how wonderful.
I love Will. He was very important to the way I think about writing about the local. I mean, no one calls him provincial writing about Patterson.
No. I love, and you know, I did, when I got divorced, my first time, I haven't gotten the second one yet, but anyhow, and I went out to Naropa Institute in Boulder and took Allen Ginsberg's disembodied poetics course, because I thought that would take my mind off things, which it did. And he taught poetics from the beginning, because people were writing against forms, and they didn't know what the forms were. So he went back to the very beginning, you know, and... But then he did a whole thing on Williams.
Well, he loved Williams. He went and paid a pilgrimage to Williams when he started off.
Yeah, they're both from New Jersey, among other things.
Now, Allen Ginsberg spent a week at my house when he was in town. He asked if he could stay there.
No kidding.
Do you like that? Yeah.
How did he use a lot of towels or anything? Or what? How was he as a house guest?
Actually, it's a terrible story because he came with food poisoning.
Oh, my God.
And someone said, I gave him food poisoning. He said, she didn't give it to me. But all night I stayed up and I was like, should I call an ambulance? I don't want Allen Ginsberg to die at my house.
Oh, no.
I was really, like, nervous.
Yeah.
But he was better in a day or two. And
what, did he have an undercooked brat or something?
He had been traveling quite a bit, and he came just so sick.
Yeah, well, that's almost a wonderful story.
I cured him. I didn't make him sick.
That's almost a wonderful story.
Almost.
Almost a wonderful. I mean, he was sick.
He
almost died.
It's really small. But when they started cloning people, I was like, I shouldn't have washed it when he gave it to me. It was his. Yeah. That's all. Nothing else.
Okay, I don't know where to interject on this story, so I'm not going to.
Well, I just thought I could maybe clone Allen Ginsberg because no one else like him.
Yeah, but Williams, and he admired him and loved him as well. But a doctor who wrote about things that he saw. I mean, early mornings in Patterson, going to someone's, when doctors still made house calls and stuff, and what he saw and what he experienced, and about the people they. He encountered and stuff.
On his prescription pads on the car seat next to him.
Did he?
He wrote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know that poem to Elsie?
Mm-hmm. The pure products of America go crazy.
Yeah. Oh. Love it. And it's so much of sort of what's happening now. You know, it's sort of like the American dream has gone so many strange directions and stuff.
Oh.
And I always think of that poem by and of course, yours now in Milwaukee.
Well, he's one of the influences. When I wanted to write about this place, I mean, I think of Whitman, I think of Frank O'Hara, but William Carlos Williams, Elizabeth Bishop, and people said, well, yeah, they were on the East Coast. And I was like, well, you could still write about Milwaukee. And they said no one would be interested, but really, they're interested.
Yeah, no, it's all interesting. It's about people. It's not about...
Well, places, every place has their own spots of grace and their own oddities.
Yeah. Was that thing? What is it? Oh, I want to go ahead. Start to quote Williams. I'm not good at it, so I won't do it. But Milwaukee does strange things to people.
It does.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
What strange things has it done to you?
Oh, well, look. Read the poems. I mean, here I am after all these years. I mean, I travel quite a bit because I have lived in one place, so I think you have. Well, Ginsberg said to me when I was very young, he said, you have to leave the country at least every 2 years to see what people outside the country are saying about where you live.
Really?
And so I kind of took that as a challenge and do that.
Were they saying anything about Milwaukee, where in Romania or wherever you
went? Well, last time I was in Greece, they were saying a lot about the United States.
Yeah, not Milwaukee per se, probably.
well, it's part of it.
Yeah. So this is about, it's about Milwaukee. It's also sort of about, with Catholic, heavy Catholic overtones.
Well, the Jesuits say if we have you for the first 7 years, we have you forever.
So that, and that's sort of a lot of, sort of woven in with a spirituality that you experienced.
Well, as a young woman coming up in the Catholic Church, I was always trying to explore, is there really room for women in that denomination? I had an aunt who was a nun, and I mean, when she joined the convent, we were told we'd never see her again. I wasn't bored, but things loosened up, and she lived to be 90-something. She said it was a great life. She was always happy she chose it.
And had you thought about that calling yourself as a
child? When I was a child, I used to, I would have mass in my bedroom, and I had altars, and I'd wear headbands with six scarves, and to get the kids, I'd serve grape shoes, and they had these little Clark Candy wafers. I'd give them communion if they were deserving. Yeah. And I even went, I lived close to the lake, I'd go down and get the fish and chop their heads off, because fish are very... the alewives, you know, there were many.
Why did you chop the fish's
heads
off?
Well, it just seemed... It was a big spiritual symbol, because that's what they had in the secret places in Rome where they first met, and I wanted to have that symbol in my church.
Yeah. Oh. But they had to be headless?
Well, yes. And my parents got mad when I moved it into the cubbies on either side of their dressing room because I left dead fish behind. Yeah.
Okay. Was there a point or something where some of this dissipated, some of the fervor? You're not a fallen...
I'm not saying mass anymore.
Yeah, you're not falling away.
I think of myself as having a kind of Frankenstein spirituality. I take from all different traditions and put them together in some wonderful monster.
Yeah. Was this in Bayview? Is that where you grew up?
Whitefish Bay.
In Whitefish Bay, okay. Good to know there. Oh, Bay Shore is what I was thinking. Bay Shore, yes. Hosiery. That's one of my favorite, actually.
Do you remember those stores? Did your mother go to those, or did you miss that time?
I didn't get to shop for hosiery with her. Everything
you
else.
You didn't go? My mother always took me along when she went shopping.
For girdles and such?
Oh, I have a poem about my mother's girdle, and my sister never forgave me for saying it was as large as our shower curtain, because she said that was hyperbole, and I said, well, it seemed that way.
It can be both, can it? It can be as large and hyperbole.
I actually, there used to be a TV show, Arts Place, and I did regular poems on it, and they asked me to read that there, and they'd film on location. So we went to Marshall Fields, and they wouldn't let us near the girdle. The girdles, they let us get to the camisoles, but we couldn't get to the girdles to film it there.
Really?
Yeah.
That was off limits?
Well, I guess they didn't want anyone to see the real thing.
Yeah. I know they were strange objects, and they were hanging around the house to dry. But, you know, these well, little clips on things on them, and I didn't want to know about it, but it was really kind of...
Anne Sexton had a great poem about talking about a woman stepping out of her girdle into her redeeming skin, meaning she was more beautiful when she wasn't in the cultural construct. Yeah. And so then I just took it down to my mother fighting with that girdle, trying to get it on, and, you know... Yeah. All the powdered footprints she left behind in her funny dance. But sometimes they'd put it on, they'd rerun it, and they wouldn't tell me, and I'd get these strange phone calls, and people would say things, my mother dried hers on top of the dryer. So I gradually became a kind of depository of girdle information.
Girdle lore. Gird your girdle lore, I guess. Do you want to read? Want to read that? I don't know if you want to read that one. You want to do the girdle one?
Well, you know, I'll leave it up to you, but what I was thinking is you were talking about your high school and you're on the Wall of Fame, and my mother went to Washington High School.
She did.
Well, she was Irish, French, Catholic, and the girls had their choice between Washington and Holy Angels, and her sister went to Holy Angels. You mentioned that.
Yes.
And my mother's friends went to Washington High School, and she went there, and honestly, she had one of the best educations. Later, I taught college for 30-some years, and she had as good an education than college graduates. That was Latin. Yeah. You could put any crossword puzzle in front of her, and she could do it in a few minutes.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful education.
Yeah. I had a pretty good one.
Yeah. Look.
I didn't pay much attention, I must admit. I don't know
what So what I was thinking maybe is that I could do, I think, a lot of people who are writers or just been successful, had a good teacher, especially an English teacher, somewhere in their background. So I thought maybe I could read a poem about, but if you'd rather have the girdle
No, I'll go with the non-girdle.
Okay, yeah. Should I read here?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
So this is called, actually, I think your producer told me at first you went to Whitefish Bay High School.
No.
And then I was wondering, oh, I wonder if he had Mrs. Post. This is called Mrs. Post's Sixth Hour English Class. Old white-haired Mrs. Post slippered her joined and curved forefingers into her every dress's white-laced V-neck. There, she moved her hand metrically up and down between her freckled breasts the whole while she read to us. That day it was Robert Frost. Reading Frost by any second quatrain, Mrs. Post became transported. Scansion increased her heartbeat. Spondees visibly shortened her breath. That hot afternoon we read Stopping by Woods on a snowy evening. Her recitation even gave me a slight shiver. It was summer. Wasps had flown into our opened classroom windows. Girls waved hand, folded theme paper fans. Boys after lunch dozed. The class had just left the snow-filled woods on the darkest evening of the year. There, the little horse near the frozen lake was still shaking his harness bells, and in the lonely dark, the wind was still blowing. Oh, no, now the class was off to a yellow wood. Someone was sighing. It wasn't me. I was lost. I could not keep up, but I was happily lost in clicking ice-covered birches and magnified apples and domes of heaven. When I finally managed to catch up, Mrs. Post was in philodendrons. No. She wasn't in philodendron. She was summing up the road not taken. Philosophical. Very philosophical. And that was when she posed the question, what did Frost mean? I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Now, here, I believe we are close to the moment where I decide to be a poet. Debbie Siegel, whose mother, and everyone knows this, drove the family's mink-colored Impala into the family swimming pool only a week before. Debbie, who everyone knows never speaks except in gym class or home economics, raised her arm and impatiently waved her hand as if cleaning a stubborn streak off a window. Possibly. In anticipation of all post-structural theory, Debbie said, it is clear if the speaker of the poem had traveled the more traveled road, he would have ended up at the milkman's. Since he did not need milk that day, he took the road less traveled. What? Even the most completely uninterested students perked up then. What was happening? Mrs. Post's hand flew out of her dress. Michael Durkin sat up and started sputtering. Susan O'Toole of the best jumpers and knee socks was about to try logic. Logic. What does logic have to do with poetry? When the bell prize fight loud rang, we all returned to our corners. But, and this is important, we were not untouched. Judy Feinberg's black ponytail whipped her cheeks from her agitated head swinging as she exited. And I believe I was changed also. I left Mrs. Post's room bedraggled with words and their possibilities to create hallucinations, quiet breathing, and create bouquets of confusion and feasts of loss. And in Debbie Siegel's case that summer afternoon, to focus attention on syntax and grammar. Never before in Mrs. Post's class or any other class that I shared with her had Debbie ever spoken so well, with such precision, such elaborately constructed and weirdly considered comments. And I, for one, have always been grateful to both Debbie and old white-haired Mrs. Post, who had the wisdom that afternoon to allow us to leave her classroom in such sweet suspension of sense which I grew to understand as only one of the many glittered costumes of the lively, breathful poems I am always growing to love.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. It captures so much, and it's you know, your observation is so amazing, and that's terrific.
Thank you. It makes me fearful of high school reunions, but
yeah, those are actual people. Are those their real names, or are their names?
They're real names, but they were actually they aren't the people who did the things. All the things are true, but I use the names for the music of them. I learned that because my husband studied with Saul Bellow. And
oh, really?
In Henderson, the Rain King, you'll find that the name Hazard, and that was his name.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And so I learned you rake your student years for good names and student lists in the future. I did also.
Wow. You're quite the couple. That's amazing. I love Henderson, the Rain. It's one of my favorite books of all time.
So, yeah. Well, he had the good fortune to study with him. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Would you like to do another one?
Yeah, really?
I love that. I love that. That was amazingly good.
Well, we could do a short one about Milwaukee.
Yeah.
What do we feel like? Maybe I should do this because the mayor was here, and for a while I wanted these last two lines. I mean, I could do a more lyrical and sincere one, or I could end. I'll do the short one.
Okay.
It's titled Milwaukee, and when I wrote this, people say poetry makes nothing happen. That's what the modernists thought. But when I wrote this, Robert Burns Square was a triangle. And then it was published, and all of a sudden the sign came up, Robert Burns Commons. They changed it because it was never a triangle. Milwaukee, Robert Burns Square is a triangle. Liberace, left. Lake Michigan is shrinking. 2 a.m. dumpsters fill with crutches and snow. There's a thief stealing all the St. Francis statues in the city. Plenty of tubas, though. Accordions, too. People eat fried cheese and perch tacos. Friday nights, there's enough tartar sauce for everyone. That seems to speak to the city's oddness, don't you think?
Yeah, no, it's very nice. Yeah. I love it. I love it. What else would you like to say? Do you have some place to be?
Oh, I'm having a great time with you.
You know, it's fun to, and when you're reading it, it's almost like to get inside your mind and your powers of observation, and they're both funny and beautiful and lyrical.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
And that whole spiritual thing that used to go into chopping heads off of fish has gone in a different direction.
That's right. It's directed now. I often think I'd be in jail if I hadn't followed poetry.
Yeah. And did you live right on the lake?
I've always been within a block and a half to two blocks. Even my office for 35 years had a lake view if I stuck my head out the window in the winter. So it's been a big presence. The first two sections of this book, really, all the poems start with language or imagery or incident of the lakes.
Yeah.
I think it's like the great landmark of our...
Yeah.
It's what I think. I just met someone in the lobby, and I said, well, I thought you moved out of town. And he said, I did, but like many people from here, he moved back. I think it's the lake. It's this big magnet, and no one knows it, but it brings people back here all the time.
Yeah, a powerful influence on you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's. I think it's one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Yeah. Do one more.
Oh, how nice. All right, I'll read the newer one. I'll end with this one.
Okay, all right.
The lake is featured in many of my poems, and it's in here too, but it also told, earlier you mentioned the socialist background of the city. That's mentioned in here too. Okay. This poem started with two things. The title has all these short I's in it, and I just kept hearing this phrase, silly little city I live and love in. And then I was going down my favorite road, Lafayette Hill, and one morning I had my cup of coffee, everything was falling into place, and I looked north, and every streetlight had a pink net tutu on it, And I just felt so confirmed about living in the city. And later, I told someone, I said, you know, when I reached the bottom of Lafayette Hill this morning, and I told them what I saw, and they said, well, that was publicity for the Degas show at the Milwaukee Art Museum. And, you know, it did not dampen my enthusiasm at all to know that. It's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yes.
So people talk about my Midwest surrealism, but it's not surreal.
No.
It's what's there.
It's realism.
All right. Silly little city I live and love in. Silly little city with your harp street lamps, blizzards, and vigil light stars. With your toot-toot street lights and 30 below wind chills, band shells, and polkas, and steamy, smoky lakes, pink waves. With your huge orange moons rising from the lake. With your huge red suns rising from the lake. With your sad jumpers falling into the lake, and your socialist watershed and oriental theater minarets and Sunday morning Quakers meetings surrounded by church bells and taverns, with every day George Washington walking down Wisconsin Avenue, with your ice fishing clinics and beer blessings, with your seven deadly sins parades, with your alewives parades and cladophora winds and streets named after sausages, knock. With Francis Bacon's blue face on the side of your art museum and Joseph Cornell's celestial navigation by Bird's Gallery 18 inside your museum. With your statues of Goethe and Burns, Olmsted Parks and Bakery, Wynn's silly little city that erases me. I keep fastening your lake winds to the page.
Susan Fire, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
I loved it. Milwaukee does strange things to people. New Inflected Poems is the one we've been reading from. I love it.